Hello, my little crotch fruits. Happy holidays. How have you been? How was your Xmas? Was it good? Did you get everything you wanted? This is the official last episode of 2017 of Nocturnal Emissions, and wow. What can I say about 2017 except for good riddance? My God, this year was a doozy. I mean, geez, criminy. So, I mean, listen, I don't trust anybody that says that they were having a great year this past year, because if you were having a great 2017, that says some serious stuff about you, and I don't really know how I feel about that. But at the same time, I welcome 2018 with open arms. I say out with the old, in with the new, into another great year of Nocturnal Emissions Radio. Thank you so much for being with me while I'm doing this broadcast. This is episode number 4 or 5. Oh my God, I can't even remember. That's so crazy. Thank you so much for tuning in to another night. I'm here to give you the chills, the thrills, the spooks here on Christmas. What do they call the day after Christmas? Christmas Eve. Yeah. All right. So I had a very quiet holiday. It was super uneventful. Nothing really happened. I was bad again this year, whatever. But you know, I didn't really get any kind of presents, which is fine, because all this coal that I got is keeping me very nice and warm here in the Pacific Northwest, where we got suddenly a white Christmas, which I'm loving. I mean, like, nobody, I've been ordering takeout for like the past 3 days. I haven't left my house except for now when I have to be on the radio. Other than that, though, I've just been toasty, burning my coal, setting traps for Santa, try to capture him. Didn't work this year, but next year I'll make sure to get something. I don't know. I'm thinking about liquid tar, maybe a pit of acid, something like that. I mean, he's such a large man. He can't really run that far. Anyway, so tonight I was kind of panicking a little bit about what I was going to actually do for this episode, because I have kind of been in a state of comatose for the past week or so. My whole life has honestly, straight up, been Star Wars. It's just been Star Wars for the past week. I went to go see it. I'm trying to go see it a third time. The last time I was on the radio, I was trying to organize it with my friends, trying to figure out how we were all going to get to go see the same show, because my friends were all millennials, and trying to get them together to do anything is like trying to get cats in a bath. So, yeah, we went to go see it. I went to go see it twice. I'm trying to go see it a third time. I loved it. I loved it. Listen, and if you don't love it, that's fine. It's fine not to love Star Wars. You didn't like The Last Jedi. It wasn't all that you wanted to be. That's cool. Shut up. Just shut up. Just don't even. I don't care. I don't care about your opinions, man. We're all having a great time. We're all loving the nuance. We're all just loving, like, the new spin on masculinity and what a hero is and things like that. I don't want to hear that you don't like it, okay? I loved it. Talk to me. Give me some positivity, okay? You're going to come into my life with that nonsense, okay? Tonight, though, we won't be talking about Star Wars, which is, honestly, not going to lie, a couple of days ago was my plan for this whole entire thing, was for me to talk about Star Wars for an hour, but I'm not going to do that. Tonight, I have two tales about the mythical beast Krampus. Do you know Krampus? In parts of the world, there is a legend of a horned creature. He comes around once a year to punish all the little children who were naughty. See, Santa's the good guy. He gives everyone who is good toys and candy, but there's also a bad guy. Yeah, He's the one with the long tongue and the claws and the chains that rattle when he's near. The one that smells like sulfur and hellfire with the face of a goat. He comes with a bundle of sticks so that he can beat you, place you in a sack, and drag you to hell. He's not really the subtle kind, if you know what I mean. This is the legend of the Krampus. The legend of Krampus is one that most scholars believe goes back to pre-Christian pagan times, the days of the old gods, mostly in areas like Austria, Bavaria, Croatia, the Czech Republic, Hungary, Slovakia, Slovenia, and parts of northern Italy. According to Wikipedia, in the aftermath of the 1923 election in Austria, the Krampus tradition was prohibited by the Dollfuss regime under the Fatherland's Front and the Christian Social Party. In the 1950s, the government distributed pamphlets titled "Krampus is an Evil Man," which I feel like is pretty on brand for him. Towards the end of the century, though, a popular resurgence of Krampus celebrations occurred and continues to this day. The Krampus tradition is being revived in Bavaria as well, along with a local artistic tradition of hand-carved wooden masks. And if you've never seen any of these things, these traditions that they have in Bavaria and the Alpine region of Europe, it is terrifying. These wooden carved masks that they make are terrifying and glorious. And what they do is they have these parades. Okay, I wrote a whole thing about this, okay? The Feast of St. Nicholas is celebrated in parts of Europe on December the 6th. And on the preceding evening of December the 5th is Krampus Night, or Krampusnacht. That's pretty good, right? Krampusnacht. The wicked hairy devil appears on the streets. Literally, people dress up like Krampus and they go into the streets. Sometimes St. Nicholas, aka Santa, he accompanies them, and sometimes Krampus is alone and he visits homes and businesses. The saint usually appears in the Eastern Rite vestments of a bishop, and he carries a golden ceremonial staff. Unlike North American versions of Santa Claus, in these celebrations, St. Nicholas concerns himself only with the good children, while Krampus is responsible for the bad. St. Nicholas dispenses gifts, while Krampus supplies coal and bundles of sticks so that you can, light your fires. Krampus is also shown as having one hooven foot and one human foot. One cloven foot, one human foot. In some, which this is the most disturbing part, I do not like this part of the legend, Krampus has a sexual overtone. He is pictured having a particular predilection for pursuing very buxom, curvy women. And as a buxom, curvy woman myself, that's not what I want to hear, okay? He's becoming really popular in North America, I've noticed over the past few years. I first saw him in a cartoon that was on TV several years ago called The Venture Brothers. It was this hilarious episode where they, summon the Krampus and he, beats the crap out of everybody, and it's hilarious. And I fell more and more in love with the lore of the Krampus. And now he's got everything. I mean, I've seen Krampus sweaters and toys. There was a movie called Krampus that came out last year, I think it was. Krampus is like a full-blown pop culture figure now, especially with kind of the, jaded, childless millennial crowd of kids who, don't have small little ones to be scared and kind of are over Santa, so they kind of want something that's a little bit more of their speed, I love it. I love the fact that Krampus is coming in. I mean, the whole reason of why we have Krampus in the first place is because, parents need to scare their children. I mean, that's really what this whole thing is about, is, you know, parents need a way of being like, if you're not going to behave, it's not only that you won't get toys from Santa, which is only good on some children, but also, you know, the Krampus is going to come. And I don't think that you want the Krampus to come. He's not so nice of a guy. And as most legends go, I mean, that's really how most legends, I mean, if you look at any sort of Grimm's fairy tale, that's really the kind of vibe that they're going for, is just this kind of scary kind of thing, is just as a way of, I don't know, controlling your children. I don't have kids, so I really don't know exactly how you get children under control other than threatening them. But yeah, so I've got two short tales about the Krampus. And as soon as I'm going to play you some music, some Christmas music. I mean, it's still the holidays, technically. It's the holidays until my family doesn't, we don't end the holidays, capital T, capital H, until like January 2nd. That's when the holidays are over. So I'm going to play you some music. I'm going to get ready to tell you this tale. I'm going to whet my whistle so that I'm all ready for it. And then, yeah, and then we're gonna slam it out, as the kids say. All right. So I'm back. I've got a tale for you. But first, hold on. Let me set some of the mood for you real quick. Let's just fire up this fireplace real quick. Yeah, there we go. I mean, you can't have a good Christmas story unless you have it with a rolling fireplace, right? There we go. Oh, yeah. Whew, that feels really good. Oh, but it is coming down out there. Ooh, all right. Maybe we need a little bit of music, you think? Maybe we need just a little bit of something in the background to kind of give us a little bit of something that we, you know. Yeah. There we go. That's nice. So I've got a story for you. This one is called Krampus is Coming. I was only a child when I saw Krampus. My family had just immigrated to this country. We left our every earthly possession behind, but the memories and stories of our homeland followed us on our journey. Once we arrived, we immediately settled into the same ghetto that so many others from our Eastern European village had. A decrepit row of four-story slums along an alleyway that was more sewer than street. Our father, during the few hours that he was home from the mill, said that we were better off here. But my sister and I missed the deep forests and high mountains that we had played in only a short time ago. Even when we tried to imagine myself back at home, my real home, the noise of the city always broke through my thoughts and brought me back to the alleyway. My mother tried her best to remind us of our old life. Often, as my sister and I were crawling into bed that we shared, she would tell us the stories. The same stories that she had said that her mother had told her. Some of the stories were exciting. Others made us laugh, but a few terrified us. The most awful story told of an evil one who, until the deepest parts of winter, he came out to kidnap naughty children. We shuddered as she told us of how it would torment children just like us, and sometimes We would even pretend to fall asleep in the desperate hope that she would stop. But she always finished the story. Our father would often tell her not to fill our heads with such horrible things, that some tales from our homeland should remain there. Mother, though, would shake her head and quietly insist that it was dangerous to forget where we came from. Our lives continued like this for the next several months. I had believed that I would eventually come to see our forgotten alleyway as home, but its sense of foreignness persisted. In fact, it felt as though hardly anything had changed since we arrived. Our lives had neither improved nor gotten worse, and I still felt like an unwanted stranger in my own neighborhood. The only thing that had changed was our behavior. My sister and I had recently begun getting into trouble more often. We never meant to hurt anyone. It was just that we had so little, and sometimes we had to steal if we wanted to eat that day. Usually our misdeeds were my sister's ideas, and I followed along. I guess one always looks up to their older sibling. I never believed that our petty crimes would have serious consequences, but looking back now, I can see that we were walking blindly down a dark path. I can even remember when things took an ominous turn. Ever since All Saints' Day, our mother had been warning us to be good little girls. She pleaded with us to stop our bad behavior. I remember her crying a lot. Early in December, my sister got caught stealing a piece of fruit, and I thought my mother's heart would break. She began to shake and pull her rosary beads from her pocket. For the rest of the night, she clutched the beads tightly and desperately, repeated her prayers. When I finally asked her what was wrong, she paused just long enough to glance at the window and hissed, "He knows! He knows! It might be too late!" I didn't know what she meant, but I was scared. My sister didn't seem to care. The days passed and the temperature dropped. It was the night before Christmas and snow had begun to fall. The heating had already gone out several times, and the flickering lights threatened to go out as well. As we would be attending the sunrise mass the next morning, my father told my sister and I to go bathe. Suddenly, my mother began shrieking for us not to be alone. I heard my father quickly move towards her and began trying to comfort her with his deep, soft voice. She quieted down some, but still insisted that we be not alone. My father told us to take our baths quickly and then join them. As we headed down the hallway towards the washroom, my sister sprinted ahead of me and stood in the doorway. "I'll go first," she said. "I won't be long," she laughed. I stomped my foot but said nothing as the door closed. On the best of days, there was barely enough warm water for everyone in our family to bathe. With the heat going out, there was likely only enough warm water for a single bath, and my sister knew it. I bounced from one foot to the other as I stood outside the door trying to keep warm. I heard her draw the water and began singing softly to herself as she dipped into the bath. After a few minutes, the singing had stopped, and I began to fear that she had fallen asleep in the tub. Then I heard a noise, a sharp clacking noise, like someone was wearing wooden shoes. It was slow, but deliberate, almost like it was sneaking up on something. I knocked on the door and the clacking stopped. No answer. I assumed my sister was just ignoring me or possibly trying to irritate me as she often did. Then the noise began again, this time even slower. I pressed my ear to the door and held my breath. The clicking noise had stopped, but now I could hear a light tinkling sound, like the chime of 100 bells playing in the distance. I listened until I could hear my own heartbeat. Then I heard a soft splash. She hadn't fallen asleep. She was playing a game, waiting to see how long I would stand out in the cold hallway while she turned her fingers and toes into warm prunes. I knocked again, louder this time. Still no answer. I was quite frustrated and cold by this time, so without another knock, I swung open the door and stepped inside. As I did, the power in our building went out. The hallway behind me plunged into total darkness, and I heard my mother give a cry of fright. I blinked my eyes a few times. The small heater in the corner of the washroom cast an eerie glow across the room. Feeling my way until my eyes adjusted, I stepped around the curtain at the end of the tub and began to scold my sister for taking too long. Then I saw it. It was standing beside the tub. Though it was hunched over, it must have stood nearly 7 feet tall, with its horns adding another foot or so. Coarse black fur like the pelt of a goat covered its body. It had powerful legs that ended in hooves, the source of the clicking noise. A thick tail whipped through the air behind it like a cobra circling its prey. Heavy chains wrapped around its muscular shoulders and torso. As it inhaled and exhaled, the chains produced their bell-like chimes. Yellowed eyes that burned with a smoldering rage stared down from above its twisted nose. A wheezing, bubbling sort of breath passed between its fangs and incisors that extended so far from its mottled gums that I don't believe it could have possibly closed its mouth completely. A long, pointed tongue hung down past its scarred and disfigured chin like some grotesque dog, and thick globules of spittle collected at the corners of its mouth. One of these globules broke free and fell with a heavy splash into the tub. I looked down and saw its hands, long and hairless, each finger extended in a sharp nail and was wrapped in the same kind of corpulent skin as a vulture's bald head, the result of too much exposure to rotting flesh. Then I noticed the thin wisp of hair floating up between its fingers. My sister's hair. The beast was holding her head under the water. I screamed. Only at this point did it look at me. It was not alarmed, but rather seemed almost whimsically bemused, as if I was asking it a riddle that it already knew the answer to. Looking directly at me, it stood up to its full height, its horns now brushing the ceiling. As it stood, it lifted my sister out of the water. My screams caught in my throat and I began to choke. It held her with a single hand, each of its 5 sharp nails having pierced completely through her body. Strangely, the only coherent thought that passed through my mind at that moment was the hope that my sister had already drowned and could not feel the pain. The beast took a step toward me and gave a dry, shrill laugh that sounded like an animal being strangled. It held my sister out, as if it were cruelly offering her body to me. Then we both heard the footsteps in the hallway. My parents were running to see what was the matter. The beast quickly wrapped its heavy chains around my sister's lifeless body and cinched her to its back. Then, with surprising agility, it threw open the window and leapt onto the narrow ledge. It balanced there for a moment, and then turned to look at me one last time. Our eyes met, and in that moment it burned the full horror of itself into my very soul. Then it leapt from the ledge and disappeared. My parents were already in the washroom before I realized that the beast was gone. They held me tight and began asking what was the matter. I could not speak, but only pointed towards the tub and then the window. My mother was the first to notice my sister's clothes laying beside the tub and instantly ran to the open window. I heard her scream curses in our old language at the darkness. Then she collapsed and my father ran to her, begging for someone to tell him what was going on. My mother was near to fainting and could only point to the hoof-like print in the snow upon the ledge and speak a single word. Krampus. I don't remember much after that. 4 days later, my sister's body was found by a sewer grate. There was no investigation, no arrest made. To this society, she was just another dead immigrant child, no different in their eyes than a drowned rat. Not that it mattered much. No manhunt would ever turn up that creature which was not a man. I am old now. Over the years, I've seen all my friends from that hellish ghetto die, some of them in horrible accidents. Yet, I have always found some measure of peace with every one of their deaths. I do realize that death is inevitable, but there is one fact that keeps me from finding peace with my sister's death. When the police officer came to visit my family, he said that my sister had only been dead an hour before they found her body. All right. What did you think of that one? That was pretty good, right? That story is called Krampus is Coming by Ward Hakot. And I'll post up the link to that short story on my Facebook page, Nocturnal Emissions Show on Facebook. If you want to get in contact with me, if you want to submit a story to the radio show, to the podcast, or if you have something going on that you want to promote, or you have a true life paranormal story that you'd like for me to read over the podcast, you can send that to my Twitter at Nocemiss, NOCEMISS. You can also send that to my Facebook page, the Nocturnal Emissions Show on Facebook, and you can also send it to my Gmail, nocturnalemissionsshow@gmail.com. That's the full thing spelled out, nocturnalemissionsshow@gmail.com, because I wanted a long and cumbersome email for myself. But that's neither here nor there. I've got one other of my favorite holiday songs. You guys are going to know this song immediately as soon as it plays. I know you are. And I know that you're probably going to love it. All right. So I've got one more story for you. This story I'll also leave up on the show notes at the end of the program. And don't forget that if you're listening to it live, I am every other Tuesday at 9 p.m. And if you're listening to me online, I am every other Thursday on the internet. You know, that place that you go to. All right. Let's crank up this fire. Let's get nice and toasty. Let's put on some music. All right. There we go. All right. This last tale of Krampus is called The Christmas Krampus. Every year around the Christmas holiday, magical things always seem to happen. Some things are marvelous and joyful, like visits from Santa or a snowman coming alive. Many people say that they can feel the Christmas magic in the air all around them. some things aren't so joyful. Around Christmas every year, kidnappings, murder, and suicide rates go up drastically as well. Even when horrid things like this happen, people often feel, yet rarely do they admit, that they still kind of feel a holiday magic behind it. Although it's kind of a dark magic. One example comes from a Christmas demon known as the Krampus. The Krampus is well known in countries like Germany and Switzerland for taking naughty children in the dead of Christmas Eve night. Here is one such account. December 6, 2013. My name is Eli Rockford. I am currently 7 years old as I write this. I confide in this journal something I can't tell my family because they would never believe me. I am often told that I am very smart for my age because I say and do things that most kids my age don't. But if I tell a strange story, no matter how hard I get them to believe me, my parents and siblings just say it's my imagination. Today, I looked out my window and into the street by our house and saw a man who looked like a shadow with horns. His eyes glowed orange, and seeing him scared me a lot. He was ringing a bunch of bells for something, but I just tried to ignore him and sleep. Then I heard a knock on the door. I went down to see who it was for Mommy and Daddy, but when I got to the door, someone stuck a card through the mail slot and ran off real quick. The card had a picture of a monster who had bull legs and a tail and horns on a scary-looking goat head that looked half-human. I was so scared that it was the thing in the street, but I didn't know what to do. I think I know what it is, but I hope I'm wrong. I showed the card to my dad, and he said it was Krampus. The bottom of the card said, Gross von Krampus. Daddy says every year Krampus punishes bad boys and girls on Christmas, but Santa gives good boys and girls toys, so now I'm not so scared. I always get toys on Christmas, so I must be a good kid. I still didn't tell him about the thing on the street, though. December 24th, 2013. My parents will be gone for most of tonight and Christmas morning tomorrow for some stupid work thing they have. We usually have a Christmas at 6 o'clock, but we have to wait for Mommy and Daddy to get home first. Mom told Brad, my oldest brother, that we would have a babysitter because she didn't trust him to watch all five of us by himself. Mom often let Brad watch us, but we had broke a lot of things the last couple times we were left alone, so Mommy said that she would get Rebecca to watch us. Rebecca came to the house at 5. She was really pretty, and Brad couldn't stop staring at her. Mommy and Daddy left a couple minutes after Rebecca got there. This was the first time Rebecca had watched 6 kids at the same time before, and I don't think she knew what she was getting herself into. My youngest sister, Molly, who's 3, threw a tantrum after our parents left. Levi and Garrett, my younger twin brothers, who are both 5, started fighting. Brad talked with Rebecca most of the night, and Rebecca spent most of the night in her room. Mom and Dad said that we would get Christmas gifts tomorrow, but we had to wait to open them until we got home. We made hot cocoa, but the cocoa maker is broke, so the hot cocoa burned our mouths, and we all got candy canes. Rebecca started to put us to bed at 8, and finally did it at 9:30. Even though she was clearly exhausted and frustrated, she told us she had fun, and that she wouldn't have spent Christmas Eve any other way. I awoke in the middle of the night at about 11 to see a red moon cast a dim glow on the winter snow. I looked out my bedroom window and I saw a red object coming towards our house fast. It was hard to make out, but it looked like a red sleigh being pulled by reindeer. I instantly recognized this as Santa's sleigh and ran to hide on the stairs and waited for him to come down the chimney anxiously. out of the window to the right of our fireplace, I saw the sleigh fly overhead and heard many hooves trotting on the roof. I made sure to remain perfectly still and silent as a mouse. I waited for what felt like an eternity while soft footsteps echoed on the roof above me, getting closer to the chimney. I heard scuffling as ash and dust started falling from the fireplace. Soon, two black boots landed, and then the rest of jolly old Saint Nick came through the fireplace with a bag of toys on his back. Without speaking a word, he went straight to our tree. He took gifts from his bag and scattered them under a lit-up plastic evergreen, then started on the milk and cookies we left for him. I felt that I had held my breath the entire time I was hiding on the stairs. I couldn't believe I was spying on the real Santa Claus in my own home. Eventually, he made his way over to our stockings and started putting various knickknacks and candies in our stockings, starting with Molly. Then, when he got to Levi, he took out a small black rock and eyed it sadly before placing it in Levi's stocking. It took me a second to realize that he gave Levi coal. I'm trying to stifle a laugh to the best of my ability, but a small squeak escaped my lips anyway. Santa turned around and scanned the room. I remained as still as ever. He turned back to the stockings, this time keeping his back to me, and put a piece of coal in Garrett's stocking, too. He put a candy cane in Brad's stocking, along with a pocket knife. Rachel got a new phone and some Kit Kats. Finally, he moved to my stocking, which is always furthest to the right, even though I'm a middle child. He began rummaging through his sack as I leaned forward excitedly to see what presents I was getting. Santa pulled out a large jet black piece of coal and stuffed it into my stocking. I felt a wave of anger, sadness, and regret all at once. I almost stood up right then to tell the jolly old elf off, but when he turned around, I saw tears in his eyes. He looked as though he was filled with similar emotions as I was. Like he didn't like to have to give back kids coal. It was for this reason that I remained quiet as Santa climbed back up my chimney, got into his sleigh, and flew away. I watched out my downstairs window as the sleigh flew from the roof into the black abyss of Christmas night. I sat there, still in place for a very long time, wondering how I could be a better child next year, when I spotted something out the window again. It looked like the same figure I'd seen before, but this time the sleigh looked as if it was black. I wrote all this off as it was really dark outside except for the red glow of the moon. I wondered why Santa would come back. Maybe he forgot something. Maybe he made a mistake. Maybe I wasn't naughty and he was on his way back now to fix up his mistake. My mind was racing from one thought to another as I began to hype myself up for all my possible Christmas presents. I'd stopped watching the window and had begun to daydream about the next morning, until hooves on the roof interrupted my thoughts. I heard loud, heavy clanking this time as it got closer to my chimney. Ash began to fall down the chimney, creating a cloud around the fireplace as what I assumed to be Santa coming down and landing with a loud clash. My final thought before seeing what came next was, how has no one noticed all this? Through the black cloud of ash protruded two large horns with stripes and red and white like those of a candy cane's. As the dust settled, the rest of the figure was revealed. His skin was pale, icy-looking blue. His beard was like Santa's, except it was black and came to a point. His nose was long, and his face looked grizzled, more human than I thought. His horns looked like they'd touch the ceiling if he jumped. His body looked human in shape, but animal also. His legs were twisted and ended in hooves, like that of a bull. He had a long tail. His torso was contorted, and everything but his face and palms were covered in fur. He had broken chains around his wrists, and what looked like a heavy red Christmas ornament attached to his tail by another chain. His ears were pointed, and his teeth were so yellow. Despite this horrid appearance, the most noticeable thing about this creature were the bells that it wore, and the basket on its back that it had the limp arms of a child hanging from. The stories were true. And so is Krampus. I couldn't believe my eyes. I had seen sleighs go by, magic reindeer fly, and I had seen Santa Claus himself, but none of that could have prepared me for the beast that is Krampus. He moved around the room with such speed that I was caught off guard. The thing looked about 8 feet tall with its horns, and with them he towered over everything in our large home. He made his way to the fireplace and took the coal from Levi's stocking. He rolled it around in his long, bony fingers for a moment, then took the coal from Garrett's stocking, and then mine. He studied the coal for a moment. A wide smile full of pointy yellow teeth beamed across his face. "Naughty little children," I heard it say in a cold, raspy voice. A shiver ran up my spine as it spoke. I was paralyzed in both fear and awe as the creature that roamed my living room beneath me. I thought he was moving towards the tree, but it walked past it and started going down the hallway into Levi and Garrett's room. I remember the things my father used to say about it, that he whipped bad kid, takes them away. Sometimes he eats them, sometimes he shakes them and scares them into being good. All these horrid thoughts and more danced through my head as the monster creeped into the twins' room. I tried to scream with all my might, but no sound would escape my mouth. As I finally was able to choke, Levi! Garrett! Screams had already filled their room. Levi came running out of his room, screaming his head off as Garrett followed suit. The creature's long, twisted arm reached out from the room and grabbed Garrett's leg, pulling him back into the room. I stood up from my spot on the stairs and motioned Levi to come to me. Garrett's screams fell silent. The Krampus emerged from the room alone. His nose seemed shorter now, his face even more deformed now. I gripped Levi's hand tightly and we ran for Brad's room. I wailed on his door again and again, but he wouldn't come out. I would have tried harder to get his attention, but I could hear it coming up the stairs as each hoof hit each step. I took Levi to the laundry room and told him to hide in the laundry chute. Once he was inside, I began lowering the laundry hamper so that he could get downstairs without confronting the monster. Before he was lowered out of sight, I told Levi to go start the hot cocoa maker because I had a plan. He nodded, and once he got to the bottom, I felt the hamper get lighter as he climbed out. I heard the hooved footsteps get louder and closer to the laundry room. I began pulling the laundry hamper up and climbed in just as the door was violently flung open despite the locks I had set on it. The beast licked his lips with a long, skinny tongue as he slowly approached my trembling body inside the hamper. I began to bounce myself and rock the hamper as the Krampus got closer and closer. The hamper wouldn't fall no matter how hard I rocked it, and the creature was nearly upon it. I felt its breath on me as I excitedly panted getting further. I expected its breath to be hot like that of a dog's, but then instead it felt like the coldest winter chill caressing my skin. I shook the whole hamper as savagely as I could before it budged. The hamper fell, and before I knew it, I was on the floor. I crawled out of the chute and ran to the kitchen as the demon rampaged upstairs. I came into the kitchen. I noticed no signs of my little brother, but I did see the hot cocoa maker was on. The stomping of the creature upstairs continued, but didn't seem to be near the stairs, so I focused on finding Levi. He wasn't hiding in any cabinets, and he wasn't anywhere in the living room. I decided that he might be in his room, so I quietly crept to it, slowly but steadily. The twins' room was trashed entirely, and Levi wasn't there. But there was blood on the wall. I shuddered to think that it once belonged to my baby brother. A small, bloody handprint was smeared on the wall by the door. Dread was all that I could feel in that moment. Dread for misbehaving all year. Dread for what had become of my little brother. And dread for the silence that fell in place of hooves stomping around upstairs. I quickly and silently made my way back to the kitchen and took out a large coffee pitcher of scalding hot cocoa. As I leapt out of the kitchen into the living room, I had an ominous feeling of dread as if I were being watched. I could barely see in the dark of the night as I could locate our light switches. The only source of light I had was the dim, eerie glow of the lights from the Christmas tree. As I scanned all entrances to the dining room, something moving caught my eye. The chandelier had begun to start to swing as if something had bumped into it. There was a soft thudding that accompanied the squeaking of the rocking. As I looked around to make another vague shape in the glow of the Christmas lights, I saw what bumped the chandelier. The monster was crawling on my ceiling like a large, twisted spider. His arms were bent in excruciating-looking ways to grip the ceiling and watched me with eyes that burned like fire. I wanted to scream at the top of my lungs at the very sight of it, but instead I held my ground. A cruel smile spread across his face, the face of a predator who was stalking me. He undug his fingers from the ceiling and landed on the floor in front of me with a thunderous crash, mere inches away from me. This was his mistake. I threw the entire pitcher of burning hot cocoa in his face, and the beast immediately started to writhe in agony. He covered his hands over his quickly blistering face. He took his hands off his face just as the skin began to melt and peel off, the bits of flesh and blood melting away to reveal for a brief moment. I was happily assured and content that the Krampus was dead. But then, all right, kids. I think that we're almost out of time. I think that we're probably gonna have to postpone this for another night. Oh, man, I hate to do this to you guys. I mean, that was quite the cliffhanger, but, yeah, I'm out of time. So, on behalf of me, your host, your unfortunate, ungrateful host, Isabella L. Price, I'm gonna have to wait, until next time to tell you the end of this tale. All right, you guys. Stay safe. Be good for the new year. If you're going to go out for New Year's Eve, please do not drink and drive. You can call a friend. Do a Lyft. I will see you guys in 2018 for the conclusion of this story. And remember, stay spooky.